Well, last time we were through four books of Old Testament, finishing with the book of Joshua. There was a lot of good discussion that was happening in Joshua. We didn't get to talk about where all the tribes went, and the recording device came disconnected, so that particular session wasn't available for a podcast. But were there any questions from last week? Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, anything we had to deal with before we can move on? Nothing urgent? All right. The last chapter of Joshua describes what happens as he reaches the end of his life. Trouble with any good leader, Moses, Joshua, is they're actually going to die. And what happens when they die? Well, the people still follow the Lord. Remember how we described the Sinai covenant from the book of Exodus as a covenant that established Israel as a people under God's kingship. That's the uniqueness of Israel, right? That's how Israel is different from the nations. All the nations have their own rulers, but Israel is a nation that's being led by God. And there are human leaders involved. Moses was a servant of God. Joshua was a servant of God. But once the leader dies, how will the people cope? Does everyone have notes for tonight, or a chance to at least look on with some? The first quotation in our notes tonight is from Joshua 24, where that's the question that Joshua is asking. Now, I'm going to ask a few people to read some of these texts tonight. So pick on Bruce to start with, mate. Can you do that little part in the notes from Joshua 24? There's just a selection of verses from 15 to 29, but it's quite brief.
Choose yourself this day whom you will serve. As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Then the people answered, we too will serve the Lord. After these things, Joshua, son of Nun, servant of the Lord, died.
So that's the end of Joshua. And now that there's not a human leader on the scene, how will they go? The book of Judges answers that question. The trouble is, when they're not serving the Lord, they end up serving someone else who's not as good a leader as the Lord is. That's the problem that they keep running into again and again. Now, you probably know the book of Judges. The Judges are effectively the Avengers of the Old Testament. If you're into the Marvel comic series at all, then you know how the Avengers work. They find out something that's actually wrong, stuff that's not just, that's not right, and they bring justice through the use of force. That's pretty much what the Judges of the Old Testament times are doing. Do you know what are the stories of the Judges? Anyone ever heard of Deborah? Talk about the definition of a powerful woman. Deborah and her offsider are women who are quite capable of driving a tent peg through the heads of their enemies. I mean, this is a pretty graphic book. Heard of Gideon?
Yep.
What do you know about Gideon?
Mighty man of
valor. Something about a fleece and just 300 men and rescuing Israel from the Midianites. Woo! We love those stories and we identify with these guys and think, ah, yes, and we teach this in Sunday school, teach our kids how great these heroes were. And then there's Samson, who is probably the consummate avenger, the guy who really does go out seeking to bring revenge on the Philistines. So these are not judges who sit on benches and hand down decisions. These are judges who are freedom fighters out there in the action with a sword, smashing their enemies to pieces so that Israel isn't serving these other rulers, but they can come back and serve the Lord. How do they keep getting themselves in that kind of a mess? Well, chapter 2 spells it out. There's actually about a dozen judges in total. That's the list of judges. Othniel, Ehud, and Shamgar are in chapter 3 of Judges. Deborah covers two chapters. Gideon covers three chapters. There's a guy named Abimelech in chapter 9, but he's not actually a God-appointed judge. He's a self-appointed leader. And so that's why I've got him crossed out and I'm not counting him. In chapter 10, there's Tola and Jer, and then starts the story of Jephthah, runs chapter through chapter 11 and 12. And also in 12, there's three more judges. And then Samson is the final one from chapters 13 to 16. So there's actually a dozen different judges in the book. If you were watching a mini series episode of The Judges, we got 12 episodes here. Now, I have never seen a mini series that goes, okay, up front, This is how the plot line works for our series. And if you've seen this, you kind of know how the whole story works. It's just not how you do a miniseries. But that is what happens in chapter 2 of Judges. It spells out the plot line for the entire book. After that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, that's a euphemism for dying, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. They forsook the Lord. So they didn't know God and they weren't following him. And in his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them into the hands of raiders who plundered them, and then the hand of the Lord was against them and they were in great distress. We're scooting through the verses fairly quickly here, but whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge who saved them out of the hand of their enemies as long as the judge lived. But when the judge died, the people returned to ways that were even more corrupt than those of their ancestors. Now you know how the whole miniseries works. They've given the plot away in chapter 2. That's it. The crucial thing is that you pick up what's gone wrong in this setting. You ever heard the term sheep without a shepherd? Right? What do? They wander. They scatter. They spread out. They don't have a lead that they're following who holds them together. And so these sheep without a shepherd are wandering. And when the leader dies, there's no one leading them. And so they wander off. They become enslaved to other rulers around them. They end up serving the wrong powers. And then God has to send someone to free them. But when he dies, same thing repeats over because there's no succession plan. And the main message of the book of Judges is that without a human leader, people aren't capable of following the Lord. So the Sinai covenant was this wonderful ideal that people would just be reigned over by God and wouldn't have a human reigning over them. I mean, that's liberating. That's incredibly empowering. But in practice, humans find that incredibly difficult to do. And the book of Judges makes the point that they weren't actually able to fulfill the ideal of the Sinai covenant. Actually, what happens in Judges for Israel is very similar to what happened for the nations in the early chapters of Genesis. God made this beautiful creation and said, right, all of you, you're in my image. You're meant to be serving me. You're meant to be agents who are providing my care for all the creatures of the world. And people said, oh, I'm not sure we want to serve God. I think we'd like to make good and evil up for ourselves. And then as soon as they take power over each other, they get themselves killing each other like the brothers do in the family. And evil gets a grip on them and this violence spreads until they're spiraling down into a place that God says, this can't go on. And the whole Noah event. And then after the flood, God gives Noah authority to take the lives of a murderer, which they'd never had before. So God gave humans authority that they didn't have previously. And that's why there's nations that develop in the very next chapter, Genesis 10, and the nations are ruled over by kings. And the kings then say, oh, if God's given us the power of life and death, I can use that to build a kingdom. I can start a war. I can hunt people and bring them in under my power. So the nations spiral down in those early chapters of Genesis. And in Judges, Israel is following the same trajectory, spiraling down into violence that by the end of the book becomes as bad as, or perhaps even worse than, the violence of the nations. Self-serving superheroes do not save God's people. That's the message that we're going to find again and again through the book of Judges. You know the story of Gideon? We talked briefly about this mighty man of valor who delivered Israel with only 300 people. Just an amazing story of God's deliverance through him. When God called him, Gideon was hiding out, threshing wheat down a hole. Now, threshing wheat needs to have wind blowing the husk away. So the grain can fall. So when you're down a hole, it doesn't really work very well. And God comes to him and calls this guy who isn't seeking any leadership position. And he effectively argues with God like Moses did and said, I think you got the wrong guy. I'm not after. And God says, no, you and I are going to do this thing. And with just 300 people, it's obvious that this was God, right? So God is glorified through what happens to Gideon. But once Gideon has had a taste of power, a taste of victory, a taste of what it's like to lead people, He has a hard time letting go. And so does the rest of Israel. So in Judges 8 and 22, the Israelites say to Gideon, rule over us. They invite him to take the authority to rule Israel as their king. Gideon's theology is that the Sinai covenant made God the king. So he can't be king because that position's already occupied. He says, I will not rule over you and my son will not rule over you. The Lord will rule over you. So he's got his theology right, but he still can't let go. And he says to them, what I'd like you to do is collect some gold from all of the plunder here, and I want you to make it into an ephod of gold. Now, ephod was the vest that the priests wore. So it had this kind of symbolic power within the nation, and he can't actually wear one because he's not a priest, he's not from the tribe of Levi, but he wants this symbol, this gold symbol of power as a jacket that he'd like. And so he puts this thing up, and it becomes a stumbling block for Gideon and for all of Israel, who are now beginning to worship him in power in the form of Gideon and his family instead of worshiping God. So we're already running into trouble. We're not halfway through the book of Judges yet, and we're already running into trouble with when God gives these people power, they have trouble letting go. It's kind of like, who was it said power corrupts? And absolute power corrupts absolutely. So if he's got this total power, which he's kind of trying to stay away from, but he can't get himself away from. Yeah. The reason they want his sons ruling over him is to solve the problem that they've already begun to recognize. The problem is that as soon as someone dies and there's no leader, we're in trouble. So if Gideon was king, then his son could be king and they'd have someone to lead them. When Gideon dies, he has a son named Abimelech. This is the guy I had crossed off the list before. He's not a God-chosen leader for Israel. He's a self-appointed leader. Abimelech is an interesting name that everyone who speaks Hebrew would be able to recognize. Avi is father, like as in Abba or Abraham. And Melech is the Hebrew word for king. So Abimelech has a name that says, my father was king. And if my father was king, guess what I should be? The next generation. But there's a problem with that, because if he's got any brothers, they could be kings too, right? And he does have a lot of brothers. It seems like Gideon has been living like a king. He's got 72 sons and probably some daughters as well. So there is something that's gone wrong with Gideon's life. He's living like a king of the ancient world. And Abimelech says, and I should be king, but all these brothers could be king. So what he does is he slaughters the other 70 of them so he can be king. Actually, one escapes, right? The 72 in total. So Jotham escapes. And in chapter 9 of Judges, we have the only speech in this entire action-packed book. Jotham climbs up onto a hill and says to the city that has accepted Abimelech as king, what do you think you're doing? You have just empowered the most violent killer in all of our place. He is someone who can't be trusted any more than a bushfire can. And you have put him in charge. What do you think? So the whole of the book of Judges is this struggle between, we can't manage without a king, but look how violent and corrupted power makes our leaders that they would even kill their brothers. And that's the heart of the book of Judges. This is a kind of genre like the Marvel comic Avenger movies, where it's all about the superheroes and people love it. People thrive on that kind of stuff. But at the heart of the book, we're discovering that the book is undermining that genre. It's an incredible piece of literature that has drawn people into the very thing they love in order to show them that this is not the answer. So what happens next? Well, you get a few more rulers after this, a few more judges, and one of them is a guy who is prepared to kill his own daughter. He makes a vow in the middle of the battle. God, if you give me this battle, I will kill whatever comes out to meet me when I come home. And his daughter comes out to meet him. He says, yep, all right, got to kill you. And a man who will kill his own daughter is going to kill others as well. So it comes as no surprise when in the very next chapter of the book of Judges, he kills 42,000 from the tribe of Ephraim. Then there's a couple more judges, brief stories. And then the master storyteller of the book of Judges sets us up for the ultimate judge, the ultimate leader. He tells this amazing story about an angel turning up to the parents and saying to them, guess what? God is going to give you a son. The Spirit of the Lord will be on him from the beginning of his life, and he'll be anointed to have the greatest power you've ever seen to lead the people of Israel. And we're expectantly waiting for this, finally, someone who could deliver Israel from all the violence and all the oppression and all the evil. And it's Samson. Even today, that name means the strongest person who ever lived, effectively. It's like over the top. Superhero of superheroes. But Samson never leads Israel. He never even leads a group of people against their enemies, the Philistines. He just abuses the power that God gave him in the most ridiculous ways. Instead of recognizing the Philistines as oppressing Israel and saying, okay, well, I should lead a group against that, he goes down and marries a Philistine. Literally is in bed with the enemy, and he finishes up with a gambling debt, and rather than pay the debt, he just goes and slaughters a whole lot of people. He's a violent, vindictive, revengeful fighter who is fighting for himself and his own revenge, and never leads Israel, never frees Israel, never sets his people free. So in the end, Samson's imprisoned by the enemy. And his final fate is effectively the work of a suicide bomber, someone who will destroy the auditorium, bring the house down to kill a whole lot of other people along with himself. He dies as a pitiable wretch seeking revenge in enemy territory without ever saving his people. The message of Judges is the superheroes can't save. Human strength is never going to do it. This is not actually going to work. So for those of you who are fans of the Avengers, this might undermine your enjoyment of that kind of stuff. Because in the Bollywood version, I can fly these helicopters into a jail, there's amazing snowstorms going everywhere, rescue the guy, and it all works beautifully. But in the real world, that's not how it works. In the real world, physical strength is used to abuse people, not to release people. He's the last of the judges. And from there, it all goes downhill. In the final chapters of Judges, we see people who are just taking no notice at all of what God says in terms of leadership. They are hiring people to be priests who are not from the tribe of who are not God-appointed people. They're just taking no notice of the stuff that God says. Why? Because, well, everybody's doing whatever they feel like, whatever they think, whatever they want. Whatever is right in their own eyes is the phrase you see repeatedly in Judges. And there's no leadership. And Judges begins to tell us from chapter 18, this is the problem. Without a human ruler to lead them, without someone to represent God's reign to the people and to gather the sheep and to lead them in a given direction, they can't cope. The very last verse of Judges repeats that same message. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did whatever was right in their own eyes. This is this tragic spiraling down into violence because they're not following the Lord and they haven't got human leaders. That's where the book of Judges goes. Now, I'm not going to put chapter 19 on screen and read this to you because this is R-rated stuff. If you've had trauma, then you might want to actually leave for a minute because I'm just going to summarize the chapter, and you're welcome to do that if you wish to. What happens is that one of the Levites, the priestly tribe, is tripping around the countryside with his secondary wife, his concubine. Let's just not go there. And they're in Gentile territory, enemy territory. and they feel like it might not be safe to stay the night here. So they go an extra journey until they reach a town named Gibeah, which is in Benjamin. So it's one of the 12 tribes, okay? And they go, sun's down, it's really late, we'll stay here. And that night, his concubine is gang raped by a bunch of people in the city. And when the morning dawns, she's not alive anymore. It's just utterly horrendous stuff. This is more evil, more violent than the Gentiles, right? They would have been safer in Gentile territory than where they were here. And then he's going, this stuff can't go on. We can't live like this. And there's no one to complain to. There's not a king or someone he can go and tell the story to. So how will he ever get this message through? What he does is to slice up her body into 12 parts and send a piece to each of the tribes so they'll get the message of how bad this is. And then when the other tribes see this, and they get this evidence of what's happened, they come and attack the Benjaminites and almost completely destroy the tribe. So now by the end of Judges, Israelites are not fighting their enemies, they're fighting each other. We've got judges that'll kill 42,000 Ephraimites. We've got other tribes that'll band together and almost wipe out one of the tribes completely. They are destroying themselves. And this is God's ideal nation, to show the nations how great it is. Yeah, sure. How credible is their gospel? Right, this is utterly horrendous stuff. And the book ends by saying, well, in those days there was no king. Everyone was doing what they thought was right. So when I say that Judges uses the superhero genre to destroy the whole superhero message, that's what I'm talking about. Have you got questions or comments or thought about that? Is this how you've heard the book of Judges before?
So what's the purpose of the Judges?
What's the purpose of the Judges? When Israel ended up not serving God, they always end up serving someone else because it's a vacuum. When they're serving someone else, they cry, God help, we're supposed to be your people. God sends a judge to free them. That's what's going on in the 12 cycles of the book. That's how it works.
So were the judges supposed to lead the people?
The judges then continued to lead the people while they were alive, which is, you know, gives you about 40 years till that judge dies. And then once he's gone, the next generation forgets they're meant to be serving the Lord. And because they're not serving God, they end up serving foreign powers. And it all repeats.
If God were to know, God all knowing, that Samson is going to be who he is, why appoint somebody like Samson to be the judge, to be a judge?
That's a great question. Anyone want to answer it?
Free will.
That's what I was about to ask as well.
Yeah. Were you?
Any of the judges, you know, on the basis that they were all driving it into the ground, spiraling it out of control. Now, to your point, God is all-knowing. Why?
Why? Suggestions? Yes, it seems to me that it's not like God's ignorant of what's likely to happen, but he is taking this nation on a journey, and that journey lasts centuries. It actually lasts millennia before it's completed. And on the way in this journey, they have to learn what it's like to serve God and how they can't manage to do that and the struggles. And they have to learn that the physical power of the strongest man you could possibly imagine is not going to save them. They have to learn that it's not going to be human strength, that the only way they will ever be saved is when they are serving the sovereign who's able to do that from heaven and has a radically different way to achieve that rather than through violence. So they're actually learning something about where God is taking them, which ends up in the gospel and Jesus and a totally different way of solving the violence of the earth by wearing it himself, because that's what the cross is. It's part of a bigger story.
He's teaching them the folly of not following
him. Yeah, absolutely.
The same pattern in Kings, of course, don't
you? Yep.
What's the fundamental difference between a judge and a king?
The judge is a uniquely appointed leader for that moment. The king is a dynasty so that his son will rule after him. And that's part of the point that Judges is making, is that when they had a leader, they were following God. When they didn't have a leader, that's when everything fell apart. So if there was a king, then there'd be someone else to continue leading them. And then in each generation, there'd be a human leader, and that's what they need. So in those days, there was no king. There was no one to lead them in the next generation. There's one more little twist in the last chapters of Judges. Does anyone remember the name of the town? I mentioned it once, where the Levi's concubine was gang raped and murdered. Does anyone remember the name of the town? Gibeah. Did you know that Judges tells us this 22 times? Why would they bother to mention this name so many times? I don't know how, what you are when it comes to storytelling, right? But if I'm given something in the Bible once, okay, that's a fine. If I'm told twice, oh, I should note that. I'm told three times. Wow, okay, that's significant. 22 times. What is Gibeah, and why is that so significant that this is the place where all the evil was coming from and where all the rest of the nation was going to attack and try to root out the evil that was coming from this town? Why would that be so significant? Well, you wouldn't want a leader who was like that from that place, would you? Do you know where Israel's first king came from? Saul, the first king of Israel, is a Benjaminite from Gibeah. So although Judges is telling us that the people cannot cope without a king, and they're not going to follow God, there's just no way they can do that unless they've got a king. It's also telling us that when they get a king, it's not going to solve all the problems, because the evil is already within the people and therefore within the leaders. So we need leaders, but the leaders are going to be just as permeated by evil as the rest of the community is. And this is not going to go well either. This book is just the best storytelling I know.
So God knows, doesn't he?
Yes.
He knows that Saul is going to be a failure.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, God knows. Is it too much to digest? We need leaders, but we can't trust them. We need leaders, but human leaders are always flawed people, just like the rest of us.
From God's perspective, though, to your point there, God knows. He must be clock watching, thinking, here we go. Any minute now.
If he's clock watching, he's been doing that for a long time. Yeah.
No,
that's right. Yeah, we do. We need leaders. I think this is true both in the secular realm and in the church as well. If we didn't have any leaders in Canberra, we would have a society of people who were just doing whatever they felt like, whatever was right in their own eyes, and no one would stop them, right? So evil would be able to take over. So we need leaders in Canberra. But as soon as you vote for anybody, and they get in, they become a politician. This is so relevant. And even in a church setting where we seek to lead you in the best way that we can, but each of us is flawed people. Each of us has got stories of where we've been out of line with God, where we've struggled with God. And so even in church, you will sometimes get people who are abused spiritually, physically, emotionally. You get people who are on a power trip. And I want to encourage you not to view any of the leaders of Riverview in that kind of a way. Don't put anybody on a pedestal as if they're kind of like, this is God's wonderful person. I love Steve, but when he came here, I was touched by the fact that he said, my biggest fear is that I'll fail you. I remember him saying that. He's a vulnerable person who can fail, and Tanya, and Alan, and each of us don't put us on a pedestal, because human leaders, as soon as you do that, as soon as we got power, we had the temptation to misuse that power. Every one of us, in every realm of life. I see that happening in politics. You see some young idealistic people who think, I'll go to Canberra and I'll make it better for the unemployed or for the homeless, you know, whatever it actually is. And these wonderful ideals, but once they get power, and they're part of a party machine. It's like something corrupts us and destroys us. And Judges is telling us this stuff. This is real. You've got to know this is real. This is in our Bible because God's pointing it out to us. So be careful with how much we trust leaders. The Psalms will tell you again and again, do not put your trust in princes, in human leaders. Don't do it, because they will let you down. At worst, they'll die, and they're gone, and they're not there anymore, right? There's no lasting help from him. We've got to be able to place our trust in God, but at the same time, we need human leaders. So we're vulnerable.
We're not politicians, huh?
We're all vulnerable. If you run a business and you have employees under you, you're in a position of power. The temptation is to use that power for your own benefit, to take advantage of them instead of caring for them. It doesn't matter what sector you look in. Every place where humans have power over others, there's a temptation to misuse that power, to be corrupted by that power. Seems like God's the only one who can handle that. I'm not sure if that's what you're expecting from the book of Judges. After the break, we're going to go on into the books of Samuel. You might notice we're skipping over the little book of Ruth. And it's not because I don't like Ruth. It's only 4 chapters long. I think we're going to keep Ruth for our last night of the series, if that's okay with you. In the Hebrew Bible, the books go straight from Judges to Samuel. And Ruth is in a later section of the writings, along with Daniel and Esther and Chronicles. So that's the way I'd like to tell the story. I'd like to follow the Hebrew order, and then we'll touch on Ruth in our very final night, because I think there's some interesting comparisons between Ruth and Esther that I'd like to make in our final week. So if you don't mind, we'll just skip over Ruth for now, touch it in a little while. And when we come back from our break, we'll be into 1 and 2 Samuel to talk about the first 2 kings of Israel, Saul and David.